Hello, hello. Good morning, everyone. I am, yes, hello. Excited to have Kevin on the 99 Dev Problems show this morning. Kevin, could you introduce yourself?
Well, hi, everybody. I am Kevin Griffin. I'm a software consultant based out of Chesapeake, Virginia. Been in the business for way too long. I'm coming up on... Let's see, 2006 is when I officially got started. That was almost 20 years ago. So I've been doing this for a while.
Oh, I love that. Mine's 2008. So you got a couple years on me. I love that.
Yeah.
I was in hospitality management before shifting to tech. So it sounds like that gap is where we were distant is, because we're very similar in age, as we talked about in the pre-show.
Very close. Yeah. But yeah, I'm now one of the old guys in tech. So I never thought I'd get here, but I managed to persevere.
Oh, yes. Such is life. It does happen. Sounds like you got someone in the chat over there saying hello. Good morning. Hey, it's always hard when they're... Yeah, go ahead.
I know lots of folks. No, I just say hi to everyone. Hi, everybody.
Yeah. I try to like address by name, but sometimes it's like usernames like Twitch and sometimes LinkedIn is blocked. I'm like, I don't know who you are. I'd like to address you by name, but I don't know who you are. You shared, gosh, I'm trying to think back. So, okay, let's see. Squirrel moment in the chat. You said something in your introduction that I wanted to come back to, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Okay, I don't remember. So instead, let's keep moving. Geez, look at you, just famous man, bringing all the peeps in. Anyways, so let's dive into like your earlier career, right? Because we talked a lot in the pre-show, and so I'm like kind of sort of blending that, and I want to dive into some things that we talked about. But where did you start? Like as you dove into your technological career back in 2006, what'd that look like for you?
So I was, for lack of a better word, I was kind of blessed to be that elder millennial where I knew life before the internet and kind of like grew up as the internet was becoming a thing.
Really?
Like my prime years, ages 9, 10, 11, like I was brought into like BBS culture and, I was hacking around on computers. Like back then when you had actual books, like you didn't have the internet, like you just learned as much as you needed to from books. Like I just futzed around on the computer all day. And it was really like this great thing where, going through middle school into high school, like no one knew how to like cultivate a student interested in technology. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that they just didn't know what to do. So I want to program. Yeah. And they're like, we can't help you. High school was the first time I took a like actual programming class, but like I already knew the entire like semester's worth of material. So I just sat back and just kind of did my own thing a lot of times. So like going into college, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So I'm classically trained.
Yeah.
Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science. Worst 4 years of my life. It's not that what I learned wasn't useful. There's a lot of useful stuff in there. It's just that a lot of developers that go to college go the computer science route. And computer science is not necessarily geared towards software development.
Yep.
It's geared towards a different, aspect of the computer industry. So I got way more years out of I have a minor in business systems. And those four classes I took were way more useful than everything else because it really taught how business and systems work, which I think are more critical skills than knowing syntax and what's a singleton or what's a repository, like stuff like that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. It matters, but knowing how this connects to that, how that something else, how business uses software, how to map or model a business. That stuff was way more useful. So I got this piece of paper. It's over there. It's actually behind my couch. it should be up on the wall, but no, it's over there gathering dust. I got out of college and I went to work for a little company called Symantec.
Nice.
And so worked for Symantec. Symantec builds security software. So Norton Antivirus, Norton Security Suite. It's the stuff you uninstall the moment you buy a new machine. Like, that's what Norton is. And I worked on this team called Decomposer, and we built a system that would uncompress container files. So files that can contain other files.
Yep.
And would do that on 16 different architectures and platforms. Actually, probably more than that. But anyway, long story short, I was there for 3 months, and I walked in one day and they said, all hands meeting. Hey, you're all fired. So they just laid off the entire building.
That hurts a little.
Learned very quickly that there's absolutely no such thing as job security. So I'm really glad I learned that lesson early in my career and not 15, 20 years later. After that, I went to work for a small consulting company. And at the time, I started getting involved in community. So there was a user group that wasn't local. It was 2 hours north of me. So I would drive up every month 2 hours to this user group and just try to learn something new.
Yep.
And more importantly, I was just started meeting people. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I was helping run events up in that area. And I was getting to be well known as a event organizer, as a speaker in the Virginia, DC, Maryland, North Carolina region.
That's a beautiful place to do that.
So I knew a lot of people. And So I did that consulting gig. I was only there for maybe 3 years. And someone I had met in the community said, hey, would you be interested in coming to work for us as a contractor doing some developer evangelism stuff? I'm like, that sounds awesome. And I did. I quit my job. So I quit my job, started my own business to go into consulting contracting. And we had our first child at the same time. And like all major life events happened within a month of each other.
Oh, wow. And,
I didn't know how long I was going to do that, but I have been doing that since. It's been almost 15 years now.
Oh, my goodness. Congrats.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So that's the history.
So in your consulting, right, like you talked about how you did developer evangelism, you know, early on, and that's how it started. I know that in your day-to-day today, it doesn't always look like that. So what are some of the other things and sort of scopes of work that you may have offered throughout your tenure, which is now 15 years?
Yeah. So the evangelism only lasted about a year or so, and then there was a change of management. Companies got acquired. And my my position wasn't justified because it was hard to show ROI. And so that's fine. So I got into real consulting, and I had enough contacts through my network that I said, all right, I'm looking for work, do X, Y, and Z. And I started at an extremely low rate just to get work. And so that picked up. I did a lot of training as well as part of the consulting, because I like speaking. I like teaching people stuff. So I was putting together courses. I was going into different organizations and doing private training, custom training for different organizations. A lot of that work I got from just conference talks I had done. And someone said, oh, you do training. Our company's looking for someone to do custom training on X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I can do that. And, you know, that was a really good way to pay the bills. And I would have kept doing that if it wasn't for COVID. COVID killed a lot of in-person training, corporate training.
Yep.
Which is fine. So I really went all in on just working with individual businesses. Right now, I'm just working with one we call them whale clients. So just one big client. And in the grand, if I was giving you consulting advice, if I was giving anyone consulting advice, I would say steer away from whale clients.
They're painful.
But
when you lose them.
This is also a whale client I've been with for 10 years. Like, I've kind of grown up with this company where I was the only technologist working on the product. And now I'm kind of leading a team of like 6-7 people.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it's
whales can be beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in this time where it's just the job market, the consulting market is down. So yeah. I'm not in a big hurry to, you know, go out and find other work. I'm very comfortable with where I am. I love the company I'm working for. So I'm just kind of staying in my lane. And that's most of what I do is I'm leading the technology direction for this this company and just making sure everything's on track. And I'm taking the goals of the owners, the management, and we turn those into technology decisions.
Yeah, that's awesome. So would you say that it's similar to like a CTO role potentially?
They internally, they call me the CTO. On like LinkedIn, I'll call myself the CTO for that. But I'm a very technical CTO. Like I'm still very much in the weeds every day, which goes against what the CTO should do. It's part of the necessity of just the job. There's just a lot of work to be done. And I can't just sit back and wait for everyone else to do it. I need to keep my hands dirty as well.
Yeah. It's funny because I was just writing a blog post literally right before we got on here, and I'm excited to publish it hopefully this afternoon if I can get back to it and finish it. But essentially, I wrote a little section in there about how at the end of the day, CTOs are just developers. And if you can give them the opportunity to write some code again to try out your product, like you're going to literally put the biggest smile on their face because they don't get to code as often. And arguably, they maybe should really when you think about it, because you should stay up to date on your skills, right? And I think that's probably why you're so valuable and why that whale client sticks around is like you have those skills of like leadership while also being able to dive in and like execute on code, which I think is honestly just important for all of us to sort of thrive and continue to be happy because like we love to build stuff, you know?
Yeah. I pretty much position myself on the team of I don't do any of the day-to-day just upkeep reliability stuff on the suite of products that we have.
Oh, sure.
I am more that future thinking. I'll take a big idea that needs to touch multiple products in our suite I'll iterate on that. And then once that's at a place where it's reliable, it's doing what we need it to do, I will gradually give that to someone else. And that becomes their baby to kind of keep tabs on. And then I move on to the beautiful next thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That honestly really is like, when you think about it, I think that is harnessing the best of a great CTO, right? Is still that ability to be able to do that while also like passing that along to the team to allow them to like experiment and ideate. But you've validated and vetted that like there is still something here. This is not a giant waste of time before you pass it over to them. That's cool. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I'm also the last line of support if there's a fire. I have this superpower of just knowing the entire system so well that I can jump in and usually fix a problem in the amount of time it might take someone to identify what the problem is. I have a great team, but sometimes you just need another set of eyes on a problem. And my benefit is fastest. I'm not in it. Yeah. I'm not in the product every day, but I can jump in and go, oh, well, I'm pretty sure the problem starts here. Let's work our way back. Okay. Yep. This is where we messed up. Let's fix this. And let's get something pushed out. And thankfully I have a really good team I work with. So I don't have to do that every day. That happens once, maybe every couple of weeks.
I love that. Well, good leadership, right? Thank goodness. You've been with the client for a long time. Okay, so you have some other titles as well. And so I was going to kind of like probe into that and like talk about your technology stack. So what are the other titles that you represent these days?
Let's see. All right, so consultant. I'm also a Microsoft MVP, which just means I talk a lot. If you see anyone with the title MVP, do not assume they're expert. They probably are not. They just talk a lot about the things that they love.
That's amazing though. You're a developer in your roots.
Yeah. Yeah. So Microsoft MVP, I'm a conference organizer. I've run probably hundreds of events over the past 20 years throughout the country. Or at least assisted on different events. So trainer, I've written books. I've done video courses. I try to, you know, spread out the money making aspects of my career as much as I can. So, yeah, I've done a lot. is the best way to
You're also like, I had to go check your LinkedIn quick because I was like, wait a minute, am I making this up in my head? Like, you're also the president of the .NET Foundation. Like, you know, it's a no big deal or anything.
Oh yeah, forgot about that. Yeah.
Like, that's a big deal.
So I have a very vested interest in the .NET platform. I've been working with it professionally since 2006. I've made a lot of money off of .NET, and I foresee making a lot more money off of .NET. I think in terms of tech stacks that I've just personally witnessed and been involved in over the past 20 years, .NET is the strongest. And
bring those strong opinions.
Oh, I will. Yeah.
I love it.
So I'm not trying to throw, you know, fire at anyone, but I do think
fair game.
In the long run, .NET will be far more stable than anything out there for certain types of work.
All right.
So a part of that is we have the .NET Foundation. One thing .NET doesn't do well is we don't, no platform does this well. We don't cultivate our open source ecosystem as well as we should.
Yeah, that's hard though.
Always open source drama in some way, shape, or form. True that. And the .NET Foundation is positioned to help .NET open source in the best way possible. We also help the .NET community. So we help meetups, we help individuals. We really try to be a good steward of the .NET community. And so I came on almost 2 years ago, and I was the vice president and then became the president. And my goal is, it was one of those cases where I wasn't able to really come in and start doing good work. The .NET Foundation needed a lot of cleanup. And
just most
previous boards, we weren't able to hit the ground running. We had to stop, like full stop, reassess everything we were doing and clean up. We had to cut the bleed. We were just spending money we didn't have on things that we didn't need. And so I think, you know, anyone who's in the .NET community, you look at the .NET Foundation, there's a lot of drama in the .NET Foundation. And I think I've been able to really help rebuild some of that persona. And just more importantly, the .NET Foundation is stronger now than it was when I came on. So whoever comes in after me will be able to hopefully do some of that good work moving forward.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, you play a lot of roles. Hey, Nick, glad to have you in here. You play a lot of roles. And personally, I'm selfish here when I say this, but one of my favorite roles is like, you know, conference organizer of Revolution Conf, which is where we met. For anyone who doesn't know about Revolution Conf, it was a conference in Virginia Beach and it was on the beach. And so for me, like, I think it was just a beautiful conference, like very developer curated. It was clear that I was hanging with my peers. I didn't see these giant 100K sponsor booths that none of us really like to engage with. You know, it was person to person, but still very, very valuable in the content, just incredibly valuable content. And it was on the beach. And so for me, I love those events because when they are in that type of an aspect, like that conference or Revolution Conf, I'll bring one of my kids. And so it's like they get to go on like a mini vacation with mom and there's no one else with, none of the other kids. And so I remember bringing my son to Revolution Conf and like he was able to like go play on the beach and like mess around while I was like being a nerd and being a developer. And it's just like, not only was it a great event, but it just was in such a beautiful place that really just allowed you to just like, you know, relax and just hang with your peers and just enjoy the event. So anyways, that's my little rant on Revolution Conf and how much I love it. But that's one of my favorite titles personally.
I love it too. I wish we'd love to bring Revolution Conf back. It's just not the best economy right now to bring back a full scale conference.
For sure.
Like our budget, I have this benefit of I've run businesses for a good portion of my life. Like I look at and a conference the same way I look at a business. And the rule is that the conference has to pay for itself. And if it can't do that, there's no reason to do the conference. Like, right. I don't love
it's just too risky.
Community. Yeah. There are cases where people have taken out loans or debt to support conferences. And I will say this until your death in the years, I don't love you enough to go in debt for you. I don't love the community enough to go in debt for the community. Now I will sit there and I will hustle to get more people to buy tickets, to get more sponsorship, to do all those different things. But I won't even consider doing the conference unless I'm sure that it can sustain itself. And
RevolutionConf,
I don't have that trust. I don't have the trust in the community to show up to help support the thing that I love. So I'm not going to take that risk right now.
Yeah.
I know.
So,
I was going to say, that's a really bitter way to like take that conversation, but that's absolutely the truth. We would have done it 2 years ago.
I think the truth is good though, right? Because I think that, you know, Clark Sell was on yesterday. And Clark did start a conference and had it going for many, many years. So he did end up in a space where he wanted to continue to fight that fight after COVID and like continue to have that event and like very admirable and respectable to be able to do that. But you're not wrong, right? Whenever any of us decide to bring this stuff together, there's a huge risk to that if you're not backed by a corporation. If you're backed by a corporation, developers don't want to come. So it's like, it's this very like ebb and flow situation. And I think that economically, I believe that businesses are being too tight, companies are being too tight. And so, and I mean, maybe understandably, but also like, okay, we at least should go back to the way things were, like common education budgets, like just very rudimentary things that should be supplied to your employees. But I think if we see those things come back, it could change. Yeah, go ahead, jump in.
There's also, I think, a disconnect with conference organizers and understanding the needs and wants of the sponsors. Because there's been so many prospectuses, prospectuses.
I know what you mean.
But you look at a prospectus and then go, well, you get a 6-foot table and your logo on the website, that'll be $50,000. And as a business owner, I go, no, that's not $50,000 worth of ROI for me. Like I'm not going to get that ROI.
No.
But
not off that one single event. It's going to take you other work. And so why would you blow it all in that one place?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, if I, like we did an event, we do a local event and I love local events, not really catering to anyone outside our region.
Yeah.
And we sold a table for $5,000, and $5,000, and you get access to the 200 people that show up for the event. That turns out to be a really good ROI because every sponsor that we had there, said, you know, I got to speak to 200 people. I got a lot of good connections. Yes. Like that was money well spent.
That was a 5K value.
Yeah. As soon as you get up into those big numbers and you don't have the benefits to go along with it, it's really harder for these corporations to say, yep, I want to go into that. I know of one corporation that's pulling sponsorship from one event to put into another event because they can get more value out of the other event. They can send their people to it. They get a table, they get all this stuff. And I know conference organizers are just like, I just need money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you're just limited in your exhibition space. But I think a lot of times sponsorships are just too high for what businesses can realistically approve.
Yeah. Danny just jumped into the chat. Just want to shout out. Hey, Danny. Did this, right? Like, and Kevin and I were both there. Like,
yeah.
Like, he just brought together Commit Your Code. And like, I'm sure Danny could come on, and which Danny's actually slated at some point when he gets over to the scheduling link to come on the show. And so I'm sure he'll have some great insights to share in this topic too. But you know, he did the same thing. He brought a group of developers together. It was local. It was focused on local. Of course, people flew in. You know, he had some different speakers fly in and things, but it was all for charity, right? That makes it even like so much harder because businesses don't take charity seriously, which I really thought that they would. You know, we did a virtual charity event back in April in the Built for Devs Hub, and I really thought that there'd be more investment around the charity. That was my first time trying to pitch a charity sponsorship. Wow, gosh, are those hard. Like, they're just like, nope, if it's for good, I don't want to give you my money. And I'm like, well, what? Yeah. It makes no sense. And I know Danny can very much relate to that. Yeah. Well, I don't, it doesn't, like, it doesn't work for some reason.
It's kind of like when you go to the grocery store and you're checking out and they put the thing up on the pad that goes, you want to round up for charity? Yeah. And it's like, well, no, I just want to pay my bill and get out. I want to pull
people.
I stopped doing it.
I always stopped doing it
because I'm like, the multi-billion-dollar corporation can pay for the charity themselves. Like,
that's
why.
Valid.
Why am I giving money for you to benefit from the charity?
Actually, that's a good call out. Yeah.
So I'm like, I have charities I give money to all the time. Yeah. Like, that's just part of what we do.
Yep.
Same. And so,
but I feel the guilt to do it all the time.
Why it's hard to sell the charity aspect of it.
So,
but he did it. But they weren't like, bad causes. They were all great causes.
But he made it happen. So like Danny, you're saying, yeah, that's my bad. But honestly, like you still made it happen and you still had an event that didn't cut into your personal funds. And that still, like, honestly, like I can say this right now, Commit Your Code got me out of like a dark, deep depression that I didn't know I was in. I like realized that I was like, holy crap, I need to be spending time with developers. I need to be hanging out with them. I need to get back into this space. Like I need it. It's like a lifeblood for me to like actually hang out with other developers. And so when at Commit Your Code, right, I got to see you. I got to see a lot of really awesome folks that are up in the chat that I'm so thankful for. And I just had the revelation. I was like, oh my gosh, I've been building my business in the dark and my business is not an in the dark business. It's a public advocacy for developers and developer products business. Why am I in the dark? Then I started the live stream and look, now suddenly I'm happy. Funny thing, right? If we go hang out with our peers a little bit and everyone's all kind of nerding out in the chat about that. I love it.
There's definitely something psychological about talking to someone that you like, respect, but you don't get to talk to every day.
Tessa,
you and me, like we don't talk every day, but when we do talk, like I really enjoy our conversations. And that goes for like the majority of people in the chat that I know, like it's the same way. I really look forward to the 20 minutes I get to sit down and talk to him or her about whatever. That's why I do the stuff that I do.
Yeah, exactly. So for the folks that are, you know, listening in, we've been chatting about a whole bunch of stuff from, you know, Kevin's consulting to like events and Revolution Conf and how awesome it was. And then now we're talking about events and all the things. I think, gosh, my brain just dropped what I was going to say as I was recapping. Well, I'm like thinking about so much this week. Heavy in the goods. Commit Your Code. So let's talk about Commit Your Code. You spoke there. What topic did you speak on?
What did I talk about? Oh. It was my $8,000 serverless mistake.
Yes, that's what it was. That's what it was. Okay. You helped me. Folks, you should go find it, by the way, because it was really, really good. And it's very enlightening too, like your story and how you told that story around like, okay, I'm going to kind of dive into this thing. And it turned into like lucrative work for you because you dove into something. So if you want to speak to that, feel free. I wanted to bring it up as we were speaking about Commit Your Code because it was a really good session.
Yeah, I like doing talks that are from the trenches. Nothing against the folks that get up that say, I learned this thing, I'm going to talk about this thing. Like those are all very necessary talks. Sure. But I really like talks that go, I did a thing. Here's what I learned from it. And this is something that I think you would benefit from. A lot of talks come in, like serverless is probably a good example. Like every serverless talk I've ever seen has been like, it's all great. Here's all the things you can do. It's so fast. It's performant. It's really cheap, blah, blah, blah. And I want to come in and do the talk that says they're not wrong, but
here's a couple cases
where this can bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
And here's things that you might not be thinking about. And it's just the progression of my journey. Like I was that kid 20 years ago that would just play with everything without thinking about, you know, what's this look like in a system that's going to be around for 5, 10, 15 years. And I think it's really moving. That's how you move from junior to mid-level to senior. Like when you get to those senior level positions, you don't think about what's cool and new. You think about what's going to last for the next 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. Also why I'm pretty stringent on like .NET as a platform, because that stays fairly stable over a 5 to 10, 15 year period.
You're not wrong, Kevin. You are not
so, wrong. I mean, it's a great conversation to have over a beer or a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. Like,
with a bunch of developers who work in different languages, by the way, because the opinions will come out and it will be such a beautiful, lucrative conversation.
Yep. So serverless. So the talk was, I jumped on the serverless bandwagon. I was starting doing Azure Functions. I got myself in this position where I had a hammer and everything was a nail. And I was just trying to do as much in Azure Functions as I could. And then we had made some subtle changes to just our configuration, but it bumped us up from consumption level to premium consumption. And when you do that, you go from a system that costs you $3 a month to a system that was costing $8,000 a month.
Woo!
And it was literally a checkbox in configuration to go from one to the other. And it doesn't warn you. And I mean, in the defense of the platforms, like they don't have a way to tell you that the thing you're doing could potentially cost $8,000.
Yeah.
It's just up to the experience of whoever's clicking that button.
Right.
And at the time, I didn't have the experience. The other guy on my team I was working with didn't have that experience. And we didn't find out until later. It's like, oh, that was a mistake. We should not have done that, at least in the way that we did. So how do you pivot? How do you do this differently to save the business money and to do all that stuff? So those are the type of talks I like doing. And it's the type of talks I like attending, because you just learn so much from someone's mistake.
Yes. And
I also really try to, you know, push the narrative, like, even though I'm a fairly senior level guy, I still make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like, I learn from my mistakes, and I try not to make the mistakes again. But just because someone's been doing this for 20 years doesn't mean they know everything. We're still making mistakes all the time. I'm also a lot better at like just going to the business and saying, hey, I made a mistake. It cost you $8,000. I'm sorry.
My bad.
I'll do better. I've done that on more occasions than I'd like to admit, but you know, it's part of the job. You can't be a good consultant and not be able to save face when you make a mistake.
Yeah.
You can't be a good business person if you can't admit to your own mistakes.
Yeah. I think there is like so much beauty in what you just shared. Like, honestly, so many like little nuggets of lessons, right? I think the first thing is like actually telling your story around making mistakes is like so incredibly valuable, because then someone else can be like, oh my gosh, I was going to do that, right? Like when I sat in your talk, I was like, I don't know what Azure Functions are, but now I do know what Azure Functions are. And if I ever have to use them, I know what mistake not to make, right? And so I think it's a beautiful way to learn through somebody else, because you like emotionally tied, like you brought me in, right? Like Danny said, one of the best talk titles is immediately I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of money. What did Kevin do? And it like intrigues me to want to understand where that happened, how it happened, what that lesson was. And then I got to walk away with like, you know, remembering and retaining information that I would never normally retain. Honestly, I'd be like, an Azure function is what? And blah, blah, blah. It all goes out, right? Unless you actually have to collectively use it. And so it really stuck. So long story short, sounds like RJ also in the chat has another story related,
I'm sure,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, but I think it's to speak to that just a little bit more, is like, I am often afraid actually to admit some of my mistakes, because I'm worried that someone will say, hey, she's not good enough at her job, or hey, she doesn't know what she's doing because she made a mistake. Even though in my heart, every single mistake is like, oh, don't do that, but I do this, right? And so it's just more, for me, it's education and experimentation. I learn how to do it right. But for whatever reason, sharing it publicly feels like, oh, I might look bad, you know? And so, yeah.
I did a talk at Kansas City Developer Conference.
Great conference.
I love KCDC. I hope they invite me back this year. But I did a talk there.
I think I missed the cut on the submissions myself.
But it's still open until February 21st for this year.
Oh, okay. I'm putting that on my list.
I have all my conferences written down on a pad of paper to remind me when to submit.
You should tell me your list because then we can just hang out all year and that would be awesome. Anyways, not to derail what you were saying.
You're fine. So the name of that talk was Dumb Things I've Done with Relational Databases.
And oh my gosh, I love it.
I'd gotten a lot of flack about the title from different people going, you're not stowing much like confidence in yourself and blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, but I've done some dumb stuff with relational databases and it's all good information. That talk at Kansas City was standing room only out the door.
Not surprised.
They had the doors open. People were out there. And I said essentially at the beginning, this is a safe space. Like, I'm going to just tell you some silly things I've done. I'm going to explain why they were dumb and what I should have done differently, what I learned from that experience. And then towards the end, I just kind of opened it up for comments. And people were just telling me things that they've done. And
oh my gosh, that's beautiful.
It just turned into this kumbaya moment with the audience. And like, it's really hard to replicate that. And someone was saying earlier in the chat, like, everything's moving virtual. You cannot replicate that experience in a virtual setting.
Not the safety, right? I think you could do it if you had a very tight-knit group. Like, we do some roundtables in the Built for Dev Hub where it's like a 10 to 15 person maximum, right? And if folks start to get to know each other, yes, you can eventually unfold that. I learned some really beautiful techniques from Snap. Shout out to Council at Snapchat. Most amazing thing ever. Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. So you can, right? But it's not the same. When people are in person, they see you, they see your gestures, they see it on your face that you're like open and authentic and transparent. And they're like, oh, I can feel it, right? Kevin's eluding this safe space at which I can now talk about my dumb mistakes.
Yep. And I've done that talk in front of DBAs, which I was scared to death to do that talk in front of DBAs.
Good for you.
And
tell people what DBAs are.
Database administrators.
Got it.
Basically the most opinionated people you ever meet when it comes to databases, generally do not have high opinions of developers, from a professional standpoint. I love working with a good DBA on database problems because you will learn a ton just how stuff works internally. And, like the essence of dumb mistakes with databases wasn't like, oh, I accidentally did a delete without a where clause. Like, we understand that's a dumb mistake and it's really easy to do, but that's like, I want more sophisticated dumb mistakes.
Yeah. Things that they will accidentally fall into as they're building something important.
Yeah. And so I talked a lot about indexing. I talked about just how you, I'm trying to remember everything that was in that talk, but I went pretty in depth and at the end, like, I had a database administrator come up and go, you made a lot of really good points. Like, yeah, like no notes. So, I mean, that's a win in my book. Because they would have been the first ones to tell me otherwise. I have my this.cup. Oh, it's in the house. I should have.
Dude, I use this every single day, Danny. This is the absolute best. And it shows up on the live stream daily. So if the logo wasn't so shiny, this.labs would be a daily placement in my live stream unintentionally.
So you need the black logo. You need a black logo for contrast. You
would see there we go. Yeah. Danny, feel free to send me one that doesn't glare. Well, it'll be a daily appearance. I love that.
So all this, I'm doing submissions for 2025 and I'm trying to build talks that are in the trenches. And those are much harder talks to write. It's like, all right, what technology am I using that's extremely beneficial to the work I do every day? What lets my system be a 5 to 10 year system, not a 6 month system?
You and I talked about that at Commit Your Code too, when I was talking about caller devs, as I call them, which basically that's just my nice name for your older.
I'm not wearing old, the collar today.
I noticed, but hey, sorry. But you're Your little sweatshirt thing still has a collar though. But like, I mean, I don't always wear collars either, but I just, it's like the nice way of saying we're old, right? Because when we're a little bit older, we dress up a little bit differently. I don't always, cause I'm trying to be young forever, right? Rock those Converses or whatever I've got going on. But it's just my funny phrase for like, we're developers that we think differently, right? We understand the entire system because we've had to understand the entire system versus developers today coming in. And there's, I'm not saying that you're not a good developer by any means. I still really can't code myself. I've been too far away from it. So we all have our spaces and places, right? But in comparison to developers today coming in and learning how to build with frameworks and React and some of these other things that are pre-built, you get into some of these issues, right? And you're like, holy crap, something is fundamentally wrong in the base of your code that you don't understand. And so I think, you know, Kevin and I like to nerd out about that. Or maybe I do and I pull you into it, but we very much have had some great conversations about sort of the depths of understanding your entire system.
So I will have a talk. I'll probably submit this to commit your code. So look out for it, Danny. And it's basically just, it's how... Yeah, how do you go from that junior level to senior level? And it, a lot of it is systems level thinking.
It is.
I learned in college. So, and I'm, at least the number of people I've talked to who have come out of like boot camp situations and stuff, don't learn that skill. And it's a very important skill. It's what makes senior level people very good at what they do. And it's something you can learn. That's the important thing. I'd love to talk more about that in the future.
Well, I'd love to have you in the Built for Devs Hub. Like, I'm trying to just bring together random developer events, random conversations. Then we can host roundtables after the fact, so we can get into more intimate conversations to ask sort of a Q&A and unpack that. Right, talk about our problems. But, good grief, what is wrong with me today? I'm so forgetful. I will tell you, I've got this client project I'm working on that my head is just like so into it because it's like a it's deep. It's this, right? It's the understanding the stack and the framework and like showing devs that like, you know, Kubernetes and cloud, right? This complicated infrastructure that's like sometimes overly complicated. How do we as developers come back and actually think about systems? So long story short, my head is in the weeds. What was I just going to say? You were talking about commit your code, submitting your talk, systems, us going to the same events. Good grief. Kevin, what was I going to talk to you about?
I don't know.
We don't have our predictability here. Okay. Well, I guess that's gone. So that idea is gone. One thing I have been holding on to and want to bring up is your multi-threaded income podcast. Are you still doing that effective now? Or are you on a hiatus?
No, I guess hiatus might be the best word for it. I did multi-threaded income as an experiment to see what would the appetite of developers be for more business career oriented conversation. I mean, the first 15 minutes of our conversation was, all right, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this, I've done training, I've done courses, I've done books, I've done this. Like, I'm very much of the position, and I said it, there's no such thing as job security. Like, whoever you're working for now, they will drop you in a moment. Like, and it's no like disrespect to anyone. That's just business. Like, you eventually end up a line item. And if that line item needs to be zero, I mean, you go away. So build your own job security. Like, I will never fire myself from my business because I own the business. But, you know, money can come from a lot of different things. I have a very good skill set, and there's a lot of different ways to leverage that. The easiest way is always consulting. Like, consulting is the easiest way to make money. I mean, it's really hard to get started. Like, if you have no clients, you have no network, like it's not easy to get started in consulting, but it takes the least amount of time to get ramped up. Like, you find that first client, you can start on day one. Courses, teaching stuff, you know, like that's a good progression of using your skill set. But you have folks like me who put stuff on Udemy, and I make like a car payment every month on that.
Dang, dude, that's awesome.
Well, not like a good car.
Well, I know, but it's still something. It's still supplementing your income, you know? Not like a good
money.
Car.
It's money. Yeah, it's like a Geo Metro car payment, right?
Okay, I get it. But it's still something.
Lexus. But then you have like, I'm really good friends with Aaron Francis. Aaron Francis drops a course, you know, he buy a house. Like that's the difference in, you know, someone who's dedicated to it versus someone like me who dabbles in it and doesn't do it.
I get what you're saying.
Constantly. I've written books. I don't talk about books. I don't recommend anyone write a book. I've done training. Training is also really lucrative. Nice thing about training is you could write material once and just deliver it over and over and over again. Uh-huh. But in all these cases, you have to be a good salesperson. Like you have to be able to sell the stuff that you're offering. A lot of developers are not suited for that.
Yes.
There's also.
So true.
Yeah. There's
most of my clients are technical founders that can't do this. So that's why I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Because it doesn't, you don't want to do it. You just want to dabble in the code. You want to add a new feature. Yeah. You want to do this. You don't want to do that. You don't want to talk to anyone. Like you don't want to make a phone call or send an email.
You don't want to sell. Okay. They'll go out and like talk to other devs or they'll talk to their peers or they'll talk to their network, but they don't want to go sell, you know, and like get into the business side. They just want to build a cool tech.
Yep. So how do they know they're building the right thing? I mean, that's a whole nother hour conversation we could have. And then there's like the Holy Grail. I've done my own products and those are also a lot of work. You also have to be a good salesperson. You have to figure out, is there a market for the thing you want to build? And yeah. So multi-threaded income was an attempt to just expose people to all these different ways to build additional income. And it didn't necessarily have to be your day job or and something else. It's a combination. That's why it was multi-threaded. Like you could do one, but then go off and do these other things. And as you build up those skill sets and those other streams of income, maybe eventually you don't need the day job anymore. And now you have your own job security. And by job security, I really mean you have your own financial security.
And yes, I think got revenue streams all over the place, which is kind of the vein of it. Yeah.
And anyone paying attention to politics knows we have no idea if the world's even going to exist tomorrow. Like, it's one of those cases.
Yep.
So don't be reliant on a W-2.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So this is US.
I'm a telling story for this.
Don't be reliant on the daily paycheck from big company. Be reliant on yourself and your skills. Because like everyone in chat could say, I'm working for a grain company right now. They would never let me go. End of the quarter, if the numbers don't line up,
They'll let you go.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Totally agree. So you should check out that podcast. I was on Kevin's podcast and actually I'm like, I need to go back and listen to it because I had like 12 revenue streams I was planning for my business. And I think I only like have really actually capitalized on one. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? Eager early Tessa had a beautiful plan, but go ahead.
You did ask me. So that's in hiatus just because I couldn't find a good avenue to make money from the podcast.
Got it.
I'm at the stage in my life where anything that I give my effort to has to either drastically build my personal brand, which in turn helps everything else in my network, or it's got to put money in the bank. Yep. And multi-threaded income wasn't doing either. So it's on hiatus until I can rethink the approach.
Yep.
So
I love that.
Open to ideas.
Well, yeah, totally. Totally. Okay. So I remember what I wanted to talk about before I asked you about your podcast. So what I wanted to bring up is that you talked about understanding systems and system admins and building them. And that came from college and your official education. So I can relate to that, but also sort of speak to, and I just wanted to add this layer of like, you know, just understanding for any devs that might be like, oh crap, I don't have an official college degree. I'm never going to understand systems. I didn't either. I dropped out of college 3 times. I was like, nope, it wasn't for me. All times, criminal justice, business management, and software engineering, just it wasn't happening. And so what I wanted to say is I still had to understand systems because that's how things were back then. You didn't get to have all these beautiful tools. We were still making the original tools at which now have tools and more tools and more tools today. But you can get to that place, right? By like getting into the code base. Like I literally dove into the code base of every single thing that I built. So if I was learning how to, like Joomla was one of the first things, right? I was like, I learned MySQL through Joomla because I'm like, I want to build a website for Guitar Hero so we can play video games with people that we like, right? I was at home and I had a little baby and he was a great baby and I had time to blow on video games. So I learned MySQL because I wanted to build a database, or I wanted to build an app, a website, right? So I learned Joomla, and then I started learning all the source code for Joomla and understanding, you know, MVC and all the different sort of ways that programming exists and how Joomla was created and how they changed it and shifted. And so even though that's just one example, right, you can still start to understand the fundamental systems below if you dig deep enough into the actual layers and into that like base code that you're working with. And I think that's what I wanted to encourage, is like, I think that with AI and where AI is going, I think that understanding of the full system is going to be where we can shine differently, because we'll be able to speak to, no, wait, don't let AI do it that way, because it should be done this way, versus just having those traditional writing code skills that a computer can unfortunately do. So
yeah, that's actually a really good point. Like, everyone out there talking about AI taking the jobs of coders, they all pretty much say the same thing. Like, AI is as good, if not better, than a junior level dev. Like, those jobs, those are up on the chopping block. Like, that,
which is sad.
It would be really hard to be a junior level dev right now. Mm-hmm. What AI can't do well is systems level thinking. Like, it cannot think about this. So, like, most of us using AI in coding nowadays, we're like, we're working on a cog. Like, if I bring in, I'm going to use the car analogy when I do the talk, but it's like, devs are used to working on the alternator, and the alternator is an important part, but if something's wrong with power steering, like, AI is not going to be able to figure out that the bug is in power steering when you're looking at alternator. Now,
alternator start a vehicle, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know. So that's like, you know, getting things going, where like the power steering is like a good driving experience, you know, like it all comes together.
So I am like, I'm very much a grease monkey. I love working on cars. I love working on stuff around the house, and it's all systems. Like when your car breaks down, it's that's because so there's a fault in a system. Mm-hmm. So like 99% of the car is probably working just fine, but like, you throw a belt. So, all right, something's wrong. Really, all a combustion engine is, and I have to specify now because we have electric vehicles, but
this is true.
Like, a combustion engine, you need three things. You need air, fire, and spark. Or so you need spark, fuel, and I'm getting everything mixed up. But if you don't have one of those three, the engine won't run. Yeah. So, like, just understanding how these systems work, when it breaks down, you reverse engineer. It's like, all right, well, let's start here, let's start there, start there. So that talk basically starts out with me, how I debugged a car issue by working backwards in the system, understanding how the system works. So, like, even if you're building an app and it's, we use the joke, box cylinder, you have a front end, you have a back end, you have a database. All right, that's still a system. And but they're a bigger system. If it's MySQL is a big system. Mm-hmm. So if so what you're going to see is not that there's an error in the database. You're just, someone's going to call you and say, I get an error when I click on this button on the front end. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Systems level thinking goes, fuel, air, spark. Yeah. Thanks, RJ. I'm trying to remember my order. But so you have an error pressing the button, and a lot of folks will just concentrate on the button, but the error might not be in the button. It might be in the database. Yep. So system level thinking basically approaches it to, well, let's start at the button and let's work our way backwards. And let's get down to the last place it worked.
Yeah.
And then, all right, what's the next step? All right, that's where the failure was. Why is there a failure? 9 times out of 10, it's obvious what the error is. Not always, but most of the time. But
when you understand the system, though, you know, that's the thing.
You can't debug a car if you don't open the hood. Like, it's...
Or even know what's under the hood, right? Like, if you open a hood and you have no idea what's connected together and all the little pieces are, like, you're just opening the hood to be like, is something on fire? Can I fix something that's clear to me? Which is unlikely if you don't understand the system.
So that's what I would love to teach. And I think that would be insanely useful for anyone who's never thought about what we do in that way. Because that's... Like, that's like mini system. Let's go more. What if you have box cylinder, but then you need two front ends or two back ends, and or you need multiple databases? Or what if you know, what if the database is too slow? How do you improve that? How do you build that system out a little bit more?
That's the stuff I'm nerding out on right now.
So you go from box cylinder to box cylinder, cylinder. I don't know, something else. And you have all the arrows pointing in different directions. All right, something's broken. Where do you start? And if you understand the fundamental systems and how they all interact with each other, you can work your way backwards and usually fix the problem. So debugging becomes a superpower at that point.
Yes. I think there are some, you know, and so like definitely skills that someone who's a junior dev can do, right? It's just like you have to dive into that instead of perfecting and learning all the new frameworks and all the new shiny new stuff, right? Like figure out how the fundamentals are operating in one of these things, right? That really is most important. I think, holy cow, we've been talking for 55 minutes already. I love hanging out with
started.
You. I know. This, honestly, if you go back and read the transcripts from my shows, I'm pretty sure that every single time I'm always excited to meet with my guests because I am, because it's always someone that I either like really, really adore or it's someone that's new or interesting. And then at the end, we're always like, well, we could talk for hours and hours. But I don't have hours and hours, unfortunately, and we both have jobs, right? As we talked about, is it feeding into my brand or is it paying my bills? This one does feed into our brands, but not if we go for hours and hours. We start to lose
this
our ROI.
This is the silent, like third thing. It just gives me personal joy to do this.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
like that.
This
that
one is one of
everything
those.
Else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Okay. So a couple questions I like to ask folks before we end the call. So we'll kind of rapid fire with these because I didn't necessarily ask these. What is your technology stack? I think we have a general idea, but maybe outside of your love for .NET, what else do you use? Tools, other things that are, you're just a big fan of?
I love my .NET for backend. I am a JavaScript guy on the front end.
I love that.
I'm a Vue guy. And I have opinions on why that is. I use Writer for all my .NET development from JetBrains, a great tool.
Cool.
I use Cursor for my front-end development.
Interesting.
So I pay for Cursor. So it is AI-driven coding. I think it's the best tool. It's the best tool I've seen. It just keeps getting better. So
I love that.
Love Cursor. Other than that, I mean, I got, those are my big tools I use every single day.
Got it. I love that. Okay. How do you solve challenges when you're stuck?
I take a break. I walk away. I never solve a big problem in front of the computer. I always solve a big problem while I'm mucking around in the garage or taking a shower or drinking a cup of coffee. Step away from the computer. that's the easiest way to solve a problem because your brain can't concentrate. Like get a good night's sleep, take a nap. At 41 is more important. When I was 20, I could usually just plow through and get something working. I can't do that anymore. But if I go get some sleep and wake up and go, I have an idea.
Yep. I love that. I think I get a lot of different answers, right? Because, you know, there's some developers that will be like, I walk away or, you know, I try it and whatever. And I think out of most of them, I hear just go take a break the most. And I will say even from the most experienced folks, which I think is really speaks true to how important it is to just like step away and actually go and take that break and think about something else. Because sometimes our brains are just overworked, right? It's, I was watching something the other day. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically they had opened something and they were like, it's right here. And they're like, I looked at this for hours and I didn't see it. And that's the problem, right? Is you look at something for too long, you no longer see the mistakes that are in it. So I think that's incredibly valuable feedback. Okay, Kevin, where can people find you? Hopefully you're speaking at Commit Your Code, which Danny just graciously was like, yep, you're in. And I haven't submitted a talk, so we'll have to figure that out. But hopefully you're there and I will see you there. KCDC, obviously you're planning on hopefully being there and have submitted. Where can folks find you on the internet? And then, you know, for selfish people like me, what other events are you going to so I can come hang out?
I'm still on the Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky. So on Twitter at One Kev Griff, Blue Sky, it's consultwithgriff.com. because we can't just have regular handles. I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, those are the big places. Conferences. So I'm not confirmed for anything right now. It's all just kind of up in the air. I'm hoping to be at Orlando Code Camp in April. That's a great event. It's free on a Saturday. We could have a whole discussion of how like code camps like change developer events in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I agree. But
Orlando Code Camp is a great event. It's free for anyone who wants to show up. And it's in Orlando. So I like going places that have roller coasters.
Oh, me too.
I'm a huge roller coaster guy.
Oh my gosh, me too.
So
we're going on coasters together the next time we're hanging.
We should, because I will be that geek in there and say, well, this was built by Intamin and this features the blah, 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 unlike its sister coaster in this location. Yeah, I'm that guy with roller coasters. I love roller coasters.
Okay, this is a very important question before we go on to the rest of your events. Do you go and then ride roller coaster multiple times if you really love it? Or do you have to like circle the park and come back? Like what kind of rider are you?
So what I will do, so if it's a park I've never been to before, I will ride everything once at least, and I will take notes on what I like and what I don't like. And then I will only give my time back to coasters that I liked. After
you and I are so going to amusement parks together. You're my new roller coaster buddy. Cause I'm the same way. And I will, cause I want to try it all. Right. Cause you don't know what you like until you're on it and you try it. And then after that, I'm like ride or die for the ones that I love. Like,
I collect my credits. So if I have to ride it at least once, and if I hate it, I never have to ride that ride again.
Like, but you tried it.
Why do something that doesn't bring you joy? If you have a headache at the end of the ride, don't ride the ride anymore.
Valid.
Yep.
I love that.
So Orlando Code Camp, it's a toss up between KCDC, the DevUp Conference, and Beer City Code. They're all kind of within like 2-3 weeks span of each other.
Yep.
I can only do one. So I'm not sure which one I'm going to be at yet.
Okay.
I highly recommend KCDC. I love those guys. They run a great event.
Okay.
Kansas City is just a great area for an event. I've never done DevUp and I've never done Beer City Code. So those those just because it's new. And you know, commit your code. It's in November. So I plan on being there if Danny will have me.
Did he move it to November or did he move it to September?
I don't know. I don't remember. He'll chime in a minute. Later. Well, it's later in the year. I'm also planning on being at Tech Bash in Poconos. I think I don't remember if they're September or October this year. But their CFP is getting ready to open soon.
Beautiful area at a beautiful time.
It's a great little conference. And I like smaller conferences because I like the more one-on-one time with people. I also bring my son with me. He enjoys it. And
September for clarity. Roxanne has let us know that it is in September. Update your calendar.
Update. Yeah, I will. So it's at the top of my list. I just haven't filled in the blanks. I know he opened the CFP like the day after the last one, which threw me off because I wasn't ready for it.
I know. There was a couple days because in those days I was like, I'm coming, I'll be there. And we had arranged that he's like, yes, come and speak. And I was like, great. Yeah. But there wasn't an open CFP. So yeah, I kind of snuck in between there. So I love that.
So that's all I have at the moment. Yeah, maybe one or two other things in between. We'll see.
I love that. Okay, so we'll have a couple opportunities. Maybe KCDC, commit your code. I'm keynoting at PHP Tech, which I'm so pumped about because I love PHP Tech. If anyone has never been and is in PHP.
It's in Austin, right?
It's in Chicago this year. It used to be in Atlanta. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they took a break over COVID. Eli, you know, used to run it. And then they had sold that event over to the PHP Architect guys, which are amazing human beings. So I'm excited for that. That's in May. I'm giving a keynote at Baylor. I'm so proud of this talk. Like of all the talks and tech things that I've done, I'm like most proud about talking about marketing at a university, which is so not something I think I would be excited about. So I'm very pumped about that.
That one goes to the top of the resume. Like that's
hell yeah.
Distinguished.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke at random conference. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a, yes, I think there's just a little cloud with it, but it's really cool too, because it's a digital marketing competition for all the students. And so it's 36 different colleges getting together for the competition. And then I'm like their, you know, featured or keynote speaker, whatever they call it. But anyways, yeah, so I'm excited about that one. Commit your code. I submitted to, oh my gosh, Render ATL. Not sure that I would get accepted. I've never been, but the developers love it. And so I want to go mostly for camaraderie of spending time with developers. I don't know what else is on my schedule. I think that's it, but we will cross paths at a couple of these at least. So yeah, for sure. Okay. This has been awesome. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the very active chat, per usual lately. I absolutely love the engagement. Having these conversations are so meaningful, and it's super great to catch up with you and hopefully see you soon. I would love to bring you in the hub for a couple events. So let's chat. Okay. Perfect. Cool. All right. Well, I hope everyone has a fabulous rest of their day. Kevin, any parting words before I end the stream?
Nope. You're all awesome. I'm proud of you. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesdays.
Yay. Oh, beautiful parting words.